The American dream has become a nightmare. Signs of the time on cardboard on corners in town. There's a cancer called crime in our cities, and an unspoken fear. We're on our way down. We must take America back. Put an end to the gangs and the drug in the streets. And the fact that the bad guys most always go free, that is wrong. We need leaders who lead us, not stick us and bleed us, and take all our money and send it abroad.
We're back, ladies and gentlemen, hour two of the National Intel Report. Monday through Friday, the program does air from 4 to 6 p.m., and that is Central Time. I've got Jim in Texas online, and we were talking about Wally World and smart growth and all these things. Yeah, and the point that I was making before the break was that, you know, we saw and heard the issues of road rage, you know, people being gridlocked in traffic, and maybe their air conditioner was broken. They're sweaty, and they're really angry, and, well, they get angry at other drivers. Well, I can remember on the roads, it posted down here in Texas, you'll see them on IH-35 in some places, but it used to be just about on every major highway around the United States. If it was a multi-lane road, it used to say, keep right, pass left only. In other words, the left lane was for people that wanted to travel faster. Not for people that got out there and did 55 miles an hour to block you from going any faster because they thought they were doing you some good. No, the only thing they did was irritate you. But the whole thing about traffic flow and control has been going out the window. And when people would get in the left lane to try to go faster and you'd have some putz sitting there in the lane doing 55, well, if you flashed your lights or beeped your horn, that meant you were an aggressive driver and you had to be done away with. You saw that campaign going on out in California a couple of years ago. So anything that can be done, and it's really fascinating to me, because I've played around with the idea. I've watched all my life. I've been fascinated by cars and motorized vehicles my entire life, and I've watched this with fascination over the years, that by doing that one simple thing, doing public announcements, just reminding people, hey, you want to be safe on the road? Yeah, it's great. We got seat belts, mandatory laws now, and we got airbags and side airbags and, you know, cars that are constructed to crumple in certain places to absorb impact. In other words, your car is sacrificed. I mean, you can hit an object doing 30 miles an hour, whereas before your car, well, it meant $1,000 in bodywork. Now it means car replacement because the whole thing is now useless. You know, so, but I've watched this thing, and particular fascination to me was larger cities, but people not, and public service announcements saying to people, you know, the old maximum driving law is to allow, you know, for that one car length for every 10 miles an hour. It happens out on 35. You people down here in Central Texas know exactly what I'm talking about, because you will find backups on IH-35 for no good reason at all. You think, oh, there must be a major accident. I have seen traffic backed up from Georgetown to South Austin, and that's 15 miles of solid traffic, bumper to bumper, stopped on the road for no reason at all. It just fascinates me. Rather than people going, okay, this is what we have to work with, how can we improve this? No. Central Texas, what we need to do is put up more roads, and by the way, they'll be privately owned toll roads. There's a solution. By the way, they're trying to adopt that very same thing, James, in Louisiana right now. They're following Texas's model.
I'll let you go, okay, John?
Thank you, James. Appreciate your call. Fred, hang on. I'll get your call right after the break. And more information coming your way.
I can't believe it.
It's really, it's amazing.
You have to care enough about yourself to want to do something.
If you're tired of feeling sick or run down, this truly is the answer. I have so much energy now.
It makes you feel good.
And it's all natural.
Everyone in my family takes Cardivite.
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 We all use Cardivite.
Ladies and gentlemen, Heart Drop 2000 presents Cardivite. Cardivite is an all-natural supplement which is made up of our own special blend of herbs gathered from many different parts of the world, specially designed to improve your health. Come on and care about yourself just a little more with Cardivite. You can find more information at www.cardivite.us or call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822.
Cardivite is a natural thing. Gives you the edge like you've never seen. It makes you feel good. Cardivite.
Did you read this? Chicago just became the murder capital of America.
I don't understand. It's been a felony to have a gun since 95. I thought that was supposed to prevent murders, not increase them.
Criminals will always find a way to get guns, while the rest of us are just left defenseless.
Chicago authorities have seized over 75,000 firearms since 1995. And now, Chicago's murder rate is twice as high as New York City. Tonight, while you're asleep, criminals will be at work.
Not in Kennesaw, Georgia. In 1982, our city passed a law requiring every household to have a gun. It terrified the criminals, and our violent crime rate is now 75% below the national average. We sleep well here in Kennesaw.
Americans who own guns prevent over a million violent crimes every year and save lives. Get the facts. Visit armedandsecure.org. That's armedandsecure.org.
You bathe, right? And those dishes and laundry, you wash them, right? If you don't worry. Otherwise, you might want to listen. Your family is exposed to harsh chemicals daily. Chlorides, ethanol, sulfates. They're used in paint thinner, solvents, fuel additives. You'll find those chemical cocktails and more in everyday detergents and shampoo. Does that bother you? It bothers the folks at Calbend Pure Soaps. For 58 years, they've produced all-natural, earth-friendly soaps and household cleaners. No animal testing, no chemicals, no dye, no antibacterials. Just safe, natural plant extracts like extra virgin cocoa butter oils and vegetable protein oils. I don't use anything but triple concentrated Calbend Pure Soaps. What are you waiting for? Call them 1-800-340-7091 for a catalog. Nothing to lose but the chemicals. 1-800-340-7091 or visit CalbendPureSoap.com.
Get ready for Real Talk Radio. You're listening to the National Intel Report with your host, John Stadtmiller.
Something of note here, speaking about toll roads down here. Austin Toll Party is making a presentation. You need to go to austintollparty.com. And it's just not you people that live here in Austin. Excuse me, I have to sneeze. Well, it's one of those slow ones. It'll happen when I least expect it, I'm sure. April 21st at the Doubletree Hotel in downtown Austin, 6505 IH-35 North. There's going to be a concert down there, folks, at the Doubletree Hotel, and it's going to be Jimmy Vaughn and Friends. So go to the website. We have a link on rbnlive.com, and Danny tells me that it's up there right now. So check out our website. We have a link over to austintollparty.com. For more information on, and I like this. I like this. Jimmy Vaughn and Friends. Fred's back. Where'd Fred go? Fred, are you back?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. What's on your mind?
Hi. I wanted to mention that in November, there was over in New Jersey, there's a huge push to take over all the county law enforcement, all the county prosecutor services, and they're absolutely against it. But the state legislators are are taking over, and they are prosecutors are concerned they would have to seek permission from the Attorney General's office to devote resources to investigate specific kinds of crime.
Yeah.
And I know that Texas has a huge amount of counties, more than any other state.
There's a lot of them.
What do you think about this kind of proposal, and what does it do to the sheriffs in the counties?
Well, they've been gutting the power of the sheriff for years and years and years now, purposely underfunding them, giving more power and more territory to the police departments, which are, and to the PD guys that listen to this program every day, I'm sorry, guys, but basically what we're talking about here is glorified protection agency. It is a security force with its own department policies, and it can go contrary to anything that you and I would consider to be constitutional, but we do have the National Associations of Police that put their rubber stamp. But the deal has been that the county sheriffs are a real danger. The reason being, and I'll go back the way originally this country was set up, we now have 50 states, supposedly under the protection of the Fed umbrella. But when we put this country together, we specifically put it together with one thing in mind, and that's to keep the people as close to the politician's neck as you possibly can get, within arm's reach. And the county sheriff is the only constitutionally recognized law of the land.
Yeah.
Okay? So it makes sense that people that want control, that they want to pull people away from the Constitution and the good rule of law, would have to get rid of the respective agency that represents that, or department that represents that, and that being the county sheriff. Like you said, Texas has got more counties than any state in this union. Well, there's a good reason for that, because this was all broken down to county level so you can control your own politics. So it just goes naturally that since you have the only constitutionally recognized law enforcement, that they've got to be done away with. So, yeah, and I've been reading articles recently where the county prosecutors have stepped up and are overstepping the county sheriff. And they're standing up as being the vanguard investigative body, law enforcement head of the county, which is a very dangerous precedent. You know, I got several years ago when I was up in Michigan, in Battle Creek, Michigan, I remember one night somebody had broken into my car and stole my shortwave radio. And I went to call the county sheriff up there to come out and do a report on it, but it was after 5 p.m., and I was automatically kicked over to the Battle Creek Police Department. Well, I didn't want to talk to the Battle Creek Police Department because I know what the PD is all about. And I was told that, well, we can't keep our doors open past 5 p.m. because we're understaffed and we're underfunded. So there has been a move for a lot of years, and I talk to law enforcement about this all the time, especially guys in police departments. You know, why do you think they're trying to do away with that? Well, they don't know or they don't want to know, because that's where they derive their paycheck, their income. So they don't want to hear about this county sheriff. I be honest with you, I'd like to see every PD shut down. I would like to see all the law enforcement duties underneath the county sheriff and its deputies. But what they've done with all these municipalities and these little corporations, they've moved in their own private police force, which we know as police departments or the various PDs. There it is. Okay, Fred's gone. Ken in California. Hello, Ken.
Hello?
Yes.
Yes, I don't know if you're aware of it, but here in Los Angeles, there's a race war going on. In the last year, now this is between blacks and Latinos, in the last year, there's a small section of South Central L.A. It's 1 mile by 1 mile. There have been 25 murders and 50 people wounded. And I'm not talking about gangs killing gangs. It's civilians are the ones who are being mowed down. And it all started with the control of the drug trade.
Mm-hmm.
And originally, I guess you know, there are a lot more Latinos than there are blacks here. So
right.
the Latinos controlled the drug trade. The blacks tried to move in. Hey, make a long story short, it's horrendous. They're shooting people on the street who are not gang members, just walking down the street. One black gets killed, so then a Latino gets killed. And
right.
And it's not only in Los Angeles. It's in Orange County and in Riverside. This thing is totally out of control. They just had a special on the radio, NPR radio. They just had a special with various police departments talking about this in the Los Angeles area. I mean, what is this world coming to?
Well, it's coming. Here's the deal. you leave a situation boil until it just boils over, and then it starts tainting things, and then people get upset because it's unsightly and very messy. So therefore, we've let this problem go for so long, it's such a drastic problem that we have to take drastic measures. Now, if they were really serious about carving up these little cabals up there, what they would do is some good old-fashioned police work, find out who the street corner dealer is getting his drugs from, and find out who the local kingpin is, the intermediary that's buying his drugs off the bigger cartel people and their representatives. But they're not interested in that, because you see, in this country, the illegal drug trade offers them the opportunity to come in with more policing powers. And of course, if the problem's bad enough, we have to come in with extraordinary measures in order to deal with this problem. I mean, the issue of street gangs has been going on for years and years and years and years, and nothing has ever really been done. I wouldn't want to be a cop, a civilian. I wouldn't want to be anybody in out there in South Central L.A. I'll tell you what, it's a dangerous place to live. But why is that so? You know, they've talked about years about community policing programs, that the cops are on the street. I mean, officers on beat. They knew the neighborhood. They knew the potential troublemakers. The people of the community didn't look at them as being nameless, faceless badges of authority. They were real people, and they interacted with the people. They knew the neighborhoods. I mean, they knew everything that goes on, and they could smell something that was going on. Now, but no, let's put them in squad cars. Let's connect them by radio to a central dispatch point, and let's just send out cars when there's a problem. Well, a few years ago, they recognized that the cops were not interacting with the public the way they should be, so they come up with this new, brand-new thing called community policing. Well, that's the way it used to be done. You know, so that cauldron that you're talking about out there in South Central L.A., hey, it's going to blow long before Yellowstone National Park does.
Okay, one last thing is that the illegal alien situation is compounding the situation. It's making it far worse.
Yes.
And the fact of the matter is, I don't know if you've heard of order number 20 here in Los Angeles, where the police are not allowed to give any information on any illegal aliens.
I reported on that last year.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And a lot of cities around the country have the same kind of thing. And so the gang problem is proliferating. Where is this going to end? Now, Bush, of course, he wants to legalize all the aliens.
Sure.
That's not the way to go.
No, it's not. And what we're talking about is criminals and thugs, and I've heard all the bleeding hearts out there. Well, you know, I've even heard mention, well, you know, until they can find legitimate jobs, you know, a little bit of drug trafficking in order to survive on the streets is not such a bad thing.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard it all. Hey, thanks for your call, Ken.
Right.
Appreciate it. John in New York. Hello, John.
Hi. How you doing? Thanks for having me.
Yes, sir.
Just, you're talking about buildings, and in our area, they're trying to build a super mall in Syracuse. And it's like that'd be all this money and knock everybody out again, same as in Walmart. But the other thing is they built two new jails in the area where we didn't need them for huge money. They built a brand new school in which the first year the school operated, it burnt the furnace up to the fact that there was no insulation in the siding. The floor was poured over mud, so it's cracking. And the same thing's happening with the prisons. And so the building's already, like 1 or 2 years, are already falling in.
Right.
They spent all this federal money, supposedly, that was mandated on us, and yeah, it's the same scenario all around. And also, our public transportation has been running with like empty buses now for years. They got all the like secondary people around that are either can't get a job or whatever driving them. They're driving them all over, and they're just getting ready to shut us down. And
we have Cap Metro here in Central Texas, based out of Austin. And I just saw this in the paper today that they're trying to move this into Round Rock. And you can stand on any street corner down in Austin and watch these Cap Metro things. I mean, this has been a big waste of money for a long time. You can watch these Cap Metro buses going, and, you know, a seating capacity of 50 or 75 or whatever, there'll be two or three people on board the bus.
Right, the same as our area.
Yeah, I mean, I would much rather see, and I know this is not really a solution to this problem, but why not just privatize it? Oh, there we go. You know, if somebody needs to take a cab someplace, hey, give them a voucher for a cab.
It'd be cheaper.
It would be, but it's still not the right solution. But I'm watching them waste a lot of money. Hey, thanks for your call,
John.
Appreciate it. The hidden hand of the CIA, 9/11, and popular mechanics. What you didn't know about the Popes of Rome. I will do that story, the Popes of Rome, right after this break.
In America, we value our liberty. But there's a new movement quietly being pursued by politicians that will take away our precious freedoms. It's been deceptively named the Free Trade Area of the Americas, or FTAA. Proponents claim that their objective is to promote trade by removing barriers between the countries of North and South America. In reality, the FTAA is a raw power grab. It will lead to a new government over the entire Western Hemisphere. This supergovernment will steadily take away America's rights, our Constitution, even the freedoms that we love so dearly. Protect your freedoms. Go to stoptheftaa.org. Then let Congress know that the FTAA is not an option for America. Stoptheftaa.org and keep America free.
Introducing the world's best air purifier, the Aeronizer. The Aeronizer produces high levels of activated oxygen right from the air you're breathing. It works the way nature does. It's so powerful it kills molds and mildews, as well as bacteria and viruses in the air and on the surfaces in your home. Made in the USA of the finest materials with an unconditional 2-year warranty. Call 877-605-9200 or visit the website at www.aeronair.us.
If you look back in history, you'll see that all fiat currencies have failed to maintain wealth or failed altogether. But gold has always protected its holder, a true asset usable to anyone around the globe. As the value of your Federal Reserve note continues to depreciate, gold will be your only insurance. To find out more information on how to protect your wealth, call Republic Trading at 1-800-691-7898. That's 1-800-691-7898.
Do you want to plant a garden that just keeps on giving year after year? Then visit the Ark Institute and find out about their all-natural vegetable seeds. Now, these aren't hybrids. They're not genetically engineered. They're the real thing. And you'll grow the best produce you've ever grown. Not only that, you can save seeds from this year's garden and plant them next year. Now, here's the deal. The Ark Institute is offering Republic listeners free shipping on their complete collection of 40 non-hybrid heirloom seeds, plus their best-selling gardening how-to manual, Build Your Ark. A complete family food security package is just $99, and remember, shipping is free. Oh, you'll have enough for canning and freezing and fresh eating and some seeds for next year. Now, that is food security. Call the Ark Institute, 1-800-255-1912. That's 1-800-255-1912. Or visit arkinstitute.com. Do it today.
What you didn't know about the popes of Rome? On the evening of Saturday, April 2nd, 2005, after receiving the rite of extreme unction, Pope John Paul II passed away. At this time, his chamberlain would have gone to the papal hospital bed and asked the Bishop of Rome a question: "Are you dead?" There would be no reply from the Pope. The chamberlain would pick up a silver hammer and strike the Pope on the head and repeat his question: "Are you dead?" Again, there would be no reply. The chamberlain would then thrice call out the Pope's baptismal name. He would then declare the Pope to be dead. Now, this is the way that the Church has determined papal death for centuries. This is the way of the world's oldest monarchy. And I wonder if that's why the Beatles did Maxwell's Silver Hammer. One may never know. Since 1763, the August Almanac de Gotha has been the ultimate authority on the royal houses of Europe. Listed under reigning sovereign houses is the Holy See, S-E-E-E. Therein is stated, the incumbent of the Holy See is considered by Christian sovereign families as the father of the family of kings, and his holiness represents the oldest monarchy on earth. The triple sovereignty of the Pope person, Holy See, and Vatican City is distinct in the fact and in law. Internationally, he is not subject to any authority on earth. His cardinals are not considered to be princes of the church and peers of sons of reigning monarchs. Each diocese is considered to be a royal fiefdom. The word diocese originally signified an administrative unit devised by the emperor Diocletian, a a tyrant noted for his persecution of Christians. Following our brief sketches of some of the more interesting holders of the title Vicar of Christ, it should be noted that the Latin equivalent of Greek anti is vicarus, from whence is derived the word vicar. Without a doubt, there was one pope who was completely mad. In 1896, Stephen VII set in motion the trial of his rival, the late Pope Formosus, who had been dead for 9 months at the time. Formosus' corpse was dragged from his tomb and arrayed on a throne in the council chamber. The corpse, wrapped in a hair shirt, described here, was provided with counsel, who wisely remained silent while Pope Stephen raved and screamed at it. The crime of Formosus was that he had crowned emperor one of the numerous illegitimate heirs of Charlemagne after first having performed the same office for a candidate favored by Stephen. Now, after Stephen's rant, the corpse was stripped of its clothes and its fingers were chopped off. It was then dragged through the palace and hurled from a balcony to a howling mob below, who threw it into the Tiber River. Now, the body was later rescued by people sympathetic to Formosus and given a quiet burial. Stephen was strangled to death a few years later. In 964, Pope Benedict V raped a young girl and absconded to Constantinople with a papal treasury, only to reappear when the money ran out. Church historians Gerbert called Benedict the most iniquitous of all the monsters of ungodliness. The pontiff was eventually slain by a jealous husband. His corpse, bearing 100 dagger wounds, was dragged through the streets before being tossed into a cesspit. In October of 1032, the papal mitre, which was purchased for the 11-year-old Benedict IX upon reaching his 14th year, a chronicler wrote that Benedict had already surpassed in wantonness and all that who had preceded him. He often had to leave Rome in a hurry. Gregory VII was the master forger, surpassing even the great fraud known as the Donation of Constantine, the document that created the papal states. Gregory had an entire school of forgers turning out document after document bearing the papal seal of approval. These documents were later systemized in the mid-1100s in Bologna, and I think this is Gratian, a Benedictine monk. He called his work Dicterum, or Code of Canon Law. It was peppered throughout with several centuries of forgeries, along with Gratian's own fictional additions. Gregory also formalized the celibacy doctrine in order to curtail the many gifts of church lands being given away to all illegitimate children of priests and bishops, according to Catholic historian Peter De Rosa in his book Vicars of Christ. And this is a quote out of the book. Popes had mistresses as young as 15 years of age, were guilty of incest and sexual perversions of every sort, had innumerable children, were murdered in the very act of adultery, in the old Catholic phrase, why be holier than the Pope? Another interesting figure was Alexander VI, formerly Rodrigo Borgia. He reigned from 1492 to 1503. Alexander committed his first murder at the age of 12. Upon assuming the papal mitre, he cried, I am Pope, Vicar of Christ. In his Decline and Fall of Gibbon, referred to Alexander as the Tiberius of Rome, like his predecessor, Innocent VIII, Alexander sired many children, baptized them personally, and officiated at their weddings in the Vatican. He had 10 known illegitimate children, including the notorious Caesar and Lucrezia, by his favorite mistress, Venosa Cantelli. When she faded, Borgia took the 15-year-old Giulia Farnes. Farnes obtained a cardinal's red hat for her brother, who later became Paul III. Alexander was followed by Julius II, who purchased the papacy with his own private fortune. He didn't even pretend to be a Christian. A notorious womanizer who sired any number of children, Julius was so eaten away with syphilis that he couldn't even expose his foot to be kissed. Unsavory things in the papacy here. We'll continue with this on the other side. And again, folks, I don't mean this to be a slant on good Roman Catholics out there, but this is the history of Rome. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Real Talk Radio, only on the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Can you grow your own nutrition on a shelf indoors in 10 days? Wheatgrass juice is live superfood, the richest nutritional liquid known to man, packed with amino acids, living enzymes, and over 100 elements. 2 ounces of juice have the same nutrition as 3 pounds of choice garden produce. Call 1-877-699-4328. That's 1-877-MY-WHEAT. The stamina, healing, blood building, weight control, and cleansing are just the beginnings of what you will reap from pennies worth of grain. For the book, seed, and the beautiful stainless steel hand crank wheatgrass juicer for $150 plus shipping. No monthly pills, no monthly bills. This is real self-sufficiency. Go to AustinWheatgrass.com or call toll-free 1-877-MY-WHEAT. That's 1-877-699-4328. And thank you for your support of our labors and of the RBN network.
Looking for a quality shortwave radio without spending hundreds of dollars? The Sanjian 505P shortwave radio is the answer. Featuring continuous tuning for all shortwave frequencies utilizing direct keypad tuning. Dual conversion improves shortwave image for better shortwave reception. Single sideband allows for reception of upper and lower sideband signals. Other features include 45 station memory, auto preset system, auto memory scan, tone controls, dual time display, and adjustable sleep timers. Included accessories, the ANT60 portable shortwave antenna, AC adapter, stereo earbuds, and a soft-sided carrying case. Also a 1-year full factory warranty on parts and labor. All this for only $139. Call today, 877-605-9200. That's 877-605-9200. Call today.
Pain medication can't heal the cause of your pain. But what if the pain is so great as to make it unbearable without it? Listen to the results of one 44-year-old man.
My name is John Frey. I have fibromyalgia and was taking 12 to 14 Ultram tablets a day just to try to stay pain-free. I also had headaches, which would incapacitate me. I also had severe allergies and was dealing with arthritis, which set in after 2 compression fractures. After just 3 weeks on Cocoon GH, I noticed my pain was gone, and I no longer needed to take the Ultram anymore. My headaches disappeared, and my allergies are virtually gone. My energy level has increased, and I feel better today than I have in 15 years. My graying hair has also started to darken, and a bald spot on my head has started to grow hair again. My wife got on Cocoon GH, and after only 8 days, a lower back pain that she had suffered with for 14 years has gone away permanently. She no longer takes Celebrex. Thanks for such a wonderful product.
Satisfaction guaranteed. Call 888-988-6833. That's 888-988-6833.
988-6833. You're tuned in to the National Intel Report, the real talk radio show.
Under Leo the 10th, that reigned from 1513 to 1521, it was a short popeship, who cursed the excommunicated Martin Luther. Specific prices were enumerated by the Roman chancellery for every imaginable crime. For instance, a deacon accused of murder could be absolved for 20 crowns. Once pardoned, he could not be prosecuted by civil authorities. 200 years earlier, John the 12th had done much the same thing, setting prices for crimes ranging from incest to sodomy. During his pontificate, Innocent the 8th, from 1484 to 1492, granted a 20-year butter brief indulgence to persons who met his price. For a sum, one could purchase the privilege of eating favorite dishes during Lent. Leo the 10th, that's Giovanni di Medici, commissioned the Dominican friar Tetzel to sell indulgences which released from one purgatory, one from purgatory. Tetzel's famous refrain went, "As soon as the coin is in the coffer rings, a soul from purgatory springs." Pope Sixtus the IV charged Roman brothels a church tax, according to historian Will Durant. In 1490, there were 6,800 registered prostitutes in Rome. Pius II declared that Rome was the only city run by bastards, the sons of popes and cardinals. The iniquity of various popes has filled many books, and One has to wonder if the church has been cursed from the very beginning. After all, Constantine leveled the stadium of Caligula and the temple of Apollo and used the stones and marble from them to erect the original Basilica of Peter. Could we have been engaged in an act of sympathetic magic, or as some have alleged, Constantine's choice of building materials might account for the observation made in Rome by Martin Luther centuries later, who declared, if there is a hell, Rome is built over it. It is an abyss from whence issues every kind of sin. Now, a very brief mention should be made of the staggering scale of the Inquisition. In his History of the Inquisition, Canon Lorente, who was Secretary of the Inquisition in Madrid from 1790 to 1792, estimated the number of condemned in Spain alone to have exceeded 3 million people, with 300,000 burned at the stake. A Catholic historian comments on the events leading up to the suppression of the Spanish Inquisition. He says, when Napoleon conquered Spain in 1808, a Polish officer in the army, Colonel Lemanowski, reported that the Dominicans in charge of the Inquisition blockaded themselves in their monastery in Madrid. When Lemanowski's troops forced an entry, the inquisitors denied the existence of any torture chambers. The soldiers searched the monastery and discovered them under the floors. The chambers were full of prisoners, all naked, many insane. The French troops used to the cruelty and blood could not stomach the sight. They emptied the torture chambers, laid gunpowder to the monastery, and blew the place up. Well, Rome was truly drunk with the martyrs' blood, and the papacy isn't faring much better in modern age and would appear to be in serious decline, if not in outright defeat. In November 2000, Italian headlines screamed, "Devil defeats Pope." A Messaggero reported that, and I guess that's a newspaper, that reported the Pope had been confronted by a teenage girl in the Vatican who screamed insults in a cavernous voice during an audience. John Paul attempted an exorcism, but his ministrations had no effect on the girl. Devils in the Vatican would come as no surprise to Monsignor Luigi Marinelli. His book, Gone with the Wind at the Vatican, fairly flew off the shelves in Italy, revealing as it did stories of money laundering, sex abuse, and satanic rituals performed within the walls of the Holy See. Now, Marinelli's comments echoed those of the late Father Malachi Martin, a former Jesuit and exorcist, whose 1990 book, The Keys of This Blood, contains the following disturbing information. He writes, most frighteningly for John Paul, he had come up against the immovable presence of a malign strength in his own Vatican and in certain bishops' chancelleries. It was what knowledgeable churchmen called the superforce. Rumors, difficult to verify, tied its installation to the beginning of Paul the VI's reign in 1963. Indeed, Paul had alluded somberly to the smoke of Satan, which has entered the sanctuary, an oblique reference to the enthronement ceremony performed by Satanists in the Vatican. Besides, the incidence of satanic pedophilia rites and practices was already documented among certain bishops and priests, as widely dispersed as Turin in Italy and South Carolina in the United States. The cultic acts of satanic pedophilia are considered by professionals to be the culmination of the fallen archangel's rites. Adding fuel to the fire is ex-Jesuit Robert Kaiser. With his recent book, Clerical Error, Kaiser states that Malachi Martin was something of a confabulist who lived for 30 years as a kept man under the roof of the Manhattan socialite, Kakia Levanos, the ex-wife of Greek shipping magnate Stavros Nikaros. Kaiser goes on to say that Martin also stole his wife Mary from him at one point in the 1960s, when all three were quartered in Rome. Kaiser also surmises that Martin may have been a paid lobbyist for the American Jewish community. In his new book, Glimpses of the Devil, psychiatrist M. Scott Peck weighs in with many interesting comments on possession and exorcism. He also declares Martin to have been most scrupulous in his histories of the exorcisms recounted in Hostage to the Devil. According to Peck, although a formidable scholar and gifted polyglot, he speaks 17 different languages, Martin could by turns be a pathological liar and a leprechaun. Needless to say, the jury is still out on the legacy of Malachi Martin. Now, on the other hand, the verdict on the the epidemic to the Roman priesthood. The church paid out more than $1 billion in claims of victims of sex abuse by the clergy in the 1990s alone. And the American branch offers a very disturbing treatment methods to offenders. One startling example should suffice. Father Jay Mullen was accused of molesting a boy more than 20 years ago in Boston. The Cardinal Bernard Law commanded Mullen to be evaluated at St. Luke's Institute. The institute is in Washington Clinic that was profiled in the Boston Globe article on February 24th of 2002. It states in part, Mullen was flown south in 1992 to a clinic outside of Washington, D.C. The church-run clinic had a huge collection of child pornography of varying degrees, which ranged from soft porn to hardcore S&M images, all featuring preteen boys and girls. Now, this would have to rate as the most devilish form of aversion therapy ever known. It would be akin to treating alcoholics with copious quantities of vintage wine or bombarding junkies with free packets of China White. Now, truly degenerate and depraved lunatics were running the asylum known as St. Luke's. Now, notwithstanding the scandal and shock of the aforementioned, Rome carries on quietly with her program of world dominion. They lead the competition to establish the first one-world system that has ever existed. Their ultimate goal is global religious, kind of a syncretity, I guess you could call it, and to eventually wield control and authority over every individual on earth. The human solidarity goals of the Roman Church are identical to the goals and objectives of the United Nations. This is why they are such a perfect fit. Rome only gives appearance of objecting to the UN agenda. At the 1996 World Food Summit in Rome, Cardinal Angelo Sodana pledged the Holy See's support for the UN's humanistic programs of action. Now, Rome also has designs on Jerusalem. For 46 years after Israel's rebirth, the Vatican refused to acknowledge Israel's right to exist. That's okay. Jews in America do the same thing. But Rome wants to exert premier influence over Jerusalem, which will one day function as the capital of her world church. In 1993, a letter to the Pope, Shimon Peres, promised to internationalize Jerusalem, granting the UN political control over the old city and the Vatican hegemony over the holy sites within. Now, this was confirmed by the Italian newspaper La Stampa. In March of 1995, the Israeli radio station Aruz Shiva was leaked a cable from the Israeli embassy in Rome confirming the hand over Jerusalem to the Vatican. Now, the future pope will establish his throne one day within the walls of the rebuilt temple in Jerusalem. It is from here that he will rule his world church. And this day may not be far off as many believe. The cornerstones for the third temple have already been quarried by the Jewish group known as Temple Mount Faithful. They are extremely well financed and organized. They have also produced priestly vestments in accordance with scriptural outlines and are presently attempting to breed a perfect red heifer in anticipation of the coming dedication ceremonies. Now, obviously, Rome and the Temple Mount Faithful are headed for a showdown. In a letter sent to the Vatican in January of 2004, the TMF demanded that Pope John Paul return the temple menorah and other vessels and treasures removed in 70 AD by Titus and taken to Rome, where they are presently held within the secret Vatican archives. By the way, Mark Owen is a freelance writer living in Toronto, Canada. You know, folks, I've mentioned this on this program before. I have a book, and I'm going to have to bring that in. It was written over 100 years ago, and it was a Catholic priest in the United Kingdom area that got upset because of all, and keep in mind that this is well over 100 years ago, because he was in the diocese for some 30 years as a priest, so he must have been in his 50s or 60s when he quit. He wrote the book, I think, in his 50s, and he was talking about history of the previous 100 years. So, I mean, this had been going on for a long. Basically, he said that the pedophilia and the sexual perversions of the Roman Catholic Church, the Vatican was well aware of it, but did absolutely nothing about it. He wrote a book about it. And I have it on my shelf at home, folks. I mean, it's disturbing. So these revelations about papal indecency, I guess you could call it, is not a new phenomenon. You know, we got Michael Jackson in the news. Well, prosecutors just allowed evidence on previous payoff cases that is going to develop and show a pattern. Of course, much to the chagrin to the prosecution. You know, I'm watching this case. It's very interesting of the people that came out for Michael Jackson. Now, I am not on the jury of the Michael Jackson case, nor am I a judge in the trial. But after reading many different accounts of what this guy has been doing, hey, folks, you don't make a payoff to somebody if you didn't do anything wrong. Remember how the government paid off Randy Weaver? And the majority, the bulk of that money went to his children. They paid him $3.1 million, but never admitted wrongdoing. Well, Michael Jackson did the same thing. He had paid off people to keep this thing quiet. Well, one would think if you had any sense and you wanted to stay on Neverland untouched and unscathed that you wouldn't do these sorts of things again, but apparently that's not the case. So this has been going on for quite some time, and I guess, you know, Michael Jackson's kind of in microcosm of what the Roman Catholic Church did in the 1990s. Folks, they paid out over $1 billion for cases against the church because of child molestation. And they changed this, folks. I mean, it used to be that priests were allowed to be married, to enjoy, you know, life as it was intended. But they changed that in somewhere in the 1500s at the new celibacy deal. Well, I got to tell you something. I went to Roman Catholic schools when I was young. And I got to be honest, almost without exception, most miserable bunch of people I've ever been around. And I'm sorry to say that, but I lived with it day in and day out. There was one guy at that church, and I'm sure he's dead now. His name was Father Basic, a really nice, genuine human being. But the rest of them were just, you could take a look at them, just their facial features, the way they carried themselves. The nuns that when I was young, we used to joke that they looked like penguins. Folks, junkyard dogs had better demeanors. I mean, I'm talking about some of the nastiest stuff I've ever seen people do to other people. And this is supposed to be in Christ's name. Well, I don't know. I don't know, but something is wrong. Now, this is not an indictment, as I said, against people out there, the faithful, the Roman Catholics out there. But, man, you know, if this is close to God, then God's left the universe. I don't have time to get into the hypocrisy of David Horowitz. And this is a story that was done by Henry Mackow. You can go to rents.com and pull that off yourself. But it's what's going on in the universities right now. And under the supposed guise of, well, freedom. What the heck? I'm going to do it anyhow. We got time. Let's skip that last break. The Hypocrisy of David Horowitz, The Zionist Communist Matrix by Henry Mackow. He says, usually I don't praise a man I'm calling a dupe and hypocrite, but David Horowitz is doing invaluable work. He is waging a crusade against the politically correct, lib-left feminist crowd that has killed free inquiry and debate at most universities. He is championing an academic bill of rights, state legislation that protects academic freedom. Through his Center for Study of Popular Culture, an online journal, Front Page magazine, he has, and I quote, distributed 500,000 books and pamphlets on the war on terror, the Middle East crisis, and the anti-American left. He has spoken on over 35 college campuses, addressing between 300 and 1,200 students at a crack, at each stop, and generating major attention from local and campus media, building a campus network across the country. Back in the 1960s, Horowitz was editor of Ramparts magazine, a pillar of the New Left, but he saw the light, embraced what became neoconservatism, and is now a dedicated and inspired anti-communist. In essence, he switched from being a dupe of the communist wing of the Masonic conspiracy to being an agent of its Zionist wing, which explains his ample funding. Both communism and Zionism are Masonic cults. The Red Star and Star of David are Masonic occult symbols. Most communist and Zionist leaders are Freemasons. Freemasonry is an instrument of the London-based cabal of central bankers who wish to translate their control over credit and into political and cultural hegemony. They are building a one-world dictatorship and religion called the New World Order under the guise of globalization. Communism and Zionism are both a cruel hoax. Their idealistic talk of public ownership or a national homeland for Jews is bait for the naive. Their real purpose is to advance totalitarian Masonic world government. Horowitz's Center for the Study of Popular Culture, which claims 40,000 supporters, is a Zionist shill. It is, and I'm quoting again, dedicated to defending the cultural foundations of a free society, a task made even more pressing by the attack on America on September 11th. The Iraq conflict and the internal opponents of freedom this tack has revealed. As if the Zionists and neocons weren't responsible for these attacks and the phony war on terror, which protects our freedom by taking it away, the left-right debates that so polarizes and controls Americans is based on these Zionist-communist pinchers. Horowitz and his ilk play their part by presenting the so-called conservative side of the NWO matrix. Genuine conservatives are rarely heard. Both Masonic wings feel they have a monopoly on truth and are equally repressive. Both would impose their vision of the truth and repress all others. Under the banner of the quest for truth, he says, we tend to build our identity around whatever version of reality we've been given. We must consider the possibility that we have been deliberately or inadvertently deceived. Our loyalty must be to the real truth, no matter how difficult and painful it is for us to change. We must treat our intellectual adversaries with respect, as brothers in the quest for truth. Like Horowitz, I used to be a socialist and scorn conservatives as the cause of the world's problems. Now I'm a conservative, and I'm grateful to the people I once despised. Naturally, I'm glad I did not have the power to repress them. I now believe all so-called progressive movements, left, lib, socialist, feminist, are designed to overturn the natural and healthy order of society and to create the NWO. Genuine conservatives are people who are trying to apply the brakes on the NWO and change course. Progressive movements appeal to people who suffer from arrested development and want the government to be their parents and look after them. They appeal to people who cannot appreciate the inherent meaning in ordinary life and need to change the world to give their lives worth. He says, I know this from experience. Get it? The Illuminati takes away God and his spiritual laws and promise a worldly paradise, that's humanism, ladies and gentlemen, in its place based on their secret specs. Progressives have many valid criticisms, but they're not aware that the hidden agenda is to divide and undermine society. He says, now let's return to David Horowitz. David Horowitz ventures bravely into occupied territory, the socialist feminist American campus, with a message that education and indoctrination is not the same thing. Recently at Bowling Green University, where he was heckled and called a Christian fascist, although he is Jewish, he said entire departments are dedicated to indoctrinating students in leftist ideologies. These courses, which include women's studies, ethnic studies, American studies, and peace studies, are obligatory and portray the U.S. as racist, sexist, exploitive, and imperialistic. He deplored faculty bullies who betray their professional responsibilities as teachers and use their enormous power over students to ridicule and abuse those whose conservative views they despise. He derided the radical professors as hypocrites who haul down huge salaries, making it impossible for poor students to attend a university where tuition is $15,000 plus, and it's always climbing. 80% of the school's budgets is salaries. You make between $60,000 and $100,000 a year. You teach on average two courses and spend 6 weeks in, or 6 hours, I'm sorry, a week in a class. You work 8 months out of the year and you have 4 months paid vacation. And every 7 years, you get 10 months paid vacation. Now, if you're really as concerned about the working class as you pretend, why don't you volunteer to teach four courses and 12 hours a week and lower the tuition cost to those kids? He's dead on. Now, however, David Horowitz is himself driven by ideology. He is not so much interested in genuine academic freedom as in reasserting the phony neoconservative versus liberal left communist matrix on campus. He refers to, and I'm quoting, Michael Moore's hate film, Fahrenheit 9/11, and the American Liberation of Iraq. I suspect he would have had a problem with a professor promoting a neoconservative agenda to a captive audience. I suspect he would have a problem repressing alternative points of view if he could. In an article entitled Jihad, Jane, and the Jews on frontpagemag.com, Horowitz wannabe Mike Adams calls patriot professor Jane Christensen a bigot posing as a scholar. He accuses her of slander and anti-Semitism and posts her email and phone number, an implicit invitation to harass her, of course. This is typical of the left communist behavior academic freedom-loving Horowitz supposedly condemns. Now, what are Christensen's crimes? In the final exam in her course on the American presidency at North Carolina's Wesleyan College, she had the timidity to ask students to discuss the sweeping attack on democratic rights under the Bush administration and what this means for the future of democratic government in America. Adams' comment? I know most of you will be shocked by this question. Christensen's other crimes? Linking to websites like AlexJonesInfoWars.com, which features articles suggesting the U.S. is under Zionist control and is doing Israel's dirty work in Iraq. Another site she links to has a blog that received an unsolicited anti-Semitic remark. Certainly does not justify smearing her as being anti-Semitic and a bigot. Now, clearly Horowitz's organization is as adept at slander and repression as the leftist it deplores. Now, this should come as no surprise since Zionists and communists come from the same roots. Conclusion? Horowitz's neoconservatism is a progressive movement like those he deplores. It is yet another instrument of the world revolutionary movement whose goal it is to replace the Christian basis of Western civilization with a cult illuminism masked as secularism. Horowitz and socialist feminists had better be careful about tearing opponents as haters. The Nazis used this slander, according to Christopher's story. Germans who resisted firearms registration were arrested by the SS and jailed for fomenting hatred against the government and the German people. Can we stop being children? Can we stop defaming the people whom with we disagree? We don't solve our problems until we dedicate ourselves to the truth and to treating each other as brothers. People who cannot do this wish to impose a lie on the human race. They must slander because they cannot appeal to the truth. Let's look at the puppet masters and stop being their puppets. The problem that I'm having, and there seems to be this big push that, and this is still in this paradigm of thought, that the conservatives must reach out and somehow make the socialists slash communists slash progressive, whatever the case may be. Here's a group of people that are really bent out of shape because the American dream has gone sideways. There's not enough money to pay for social programs, which I never saw in the Constitution to begin with. But now that it's all broken, they want to fix it. Well, I would offer just a word of caution to be careful on what the fix is going to be. There was a reason, ladies and gentlemen, why we became the richest and truly the most powerful nation on the face of the earth inside of 200 years. It was a formula that worked, but then it kind of got a little greedy and a little corporatized. The government kind of took over a little bit, and then things really went wacko. And all I'm hearing nowadays is ranting and raving against the machine and the evil corporations. Well, there's evil people in government. There's a hidden agenda behind a lot of this stuff. But, folks, come on. We'll see you tomorrow.
The Berkey Light's unique design combines the age-old process of microporous filtration coupled with modern state-of-the-art technology and the highest quality materials, bringing you the finest water filter available anywhere. The revolutionary Berkey Light, with its exclusive black Berkey filter elements, remove pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels. Harmful or unwanted chemicals are reduced to below detectable levels. And it reduces nitrates and unhealthy minerals like lead and mercury while leaving the nutritional minerals your body needs. Made of durable Lexan, the material used in in making bulletproof glass, the system is durable, rugged, and yet attractive. The Berkey Light is transparent, so there is no guesswork when refilling the system. The water level is always visible. The rechargeable LED lighting system is beautiful as a nightlight and as necessary in emergency situations. Get the Berkey Light, the transparent water filter, for only $259.
Call today, 877-605-9200. That's 877-605-9200.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.